Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Concussion Talk Podcast, episode 129. I'm talking to Isabelle Gagnon at McGill University and a researcher, professor at McGill University, and researcher at the Montreal Children's Hospital. But first, I will pause for my sponsor.
Concussion Talk Podcast is presented by HeadCheck Health. HeadCheck Health bridges the gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Track Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck Health to improve communication and optimize care. Visit HeadCheckHealth.com for more.
And also, I just want to thank Cassandra and Miriam for doing a great job of co-hosting the podcast in June for Brain Injury Awareness Month. And so please support the Newfoundland Labrador Brain Injury Association or whatever NLBA or whatever association you are in your area of in Canada, or even if it's not Brain Injury Awareness Month, if you're somewhere else in the world, just support your Brain Injury Association. And you can follow me at Concussion Doc on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Good pause, just please download the app and you can comment on different podcasts and hopefully my podcast there. And again, subscribe. And you can subscribe on my page, concussiondoc.com. And I guess now we'll just start with Isabelle. So Isabelle, can you please introduce yourself to the, I was going to say you're a professor at McGill University and a researcher at the Montreal Children's Hospital, but just your exact title of professor, like what you teach and what you research, just the general thing, and I'll ask more questions later.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on this wonderful podcast. So I'm a professor at McGill University in the physical therapy program. So I teach pediatric physical therapy to all the new students coming through who want to work as physiotherapists in different places, hospitals, clinics, all over. So that's what I do at McGill. And then my other life is I'm a physiotherapist and researcher at the Montreal Children's Hospital. And I focus my entire research program on kids with concussions and how we can evaluate them and determine how to make them better by developing some different interventions to treat them, to help them return to things that they like to do, sports, activities, school, leisure stuff, everything that they want to do. That's basically what I do.
Oh, thanks. I can't believe I never had you on this podcast before. This episode, as I said, 129. So it's been amazing that I think because your work, the research work at the Children's Hospital sounds just right up the alley of this podcast. And I just interviewed so many physios because they were such an important part of my life and it's hilarious. So I guess I'm not sure where to start. If we start with the research or with the professorship, we'll work into research. So we'll start with the McGill. So what do you exactly teach? Do you teach pediatric physiotherapy?
Yeah, I teach pediatric physiotherapy, so that goes a little bit beyond concussions. It's all about taking care of all about taking care of kids who have problems, motor problems, after birth, birth issues, okay, things like cerebral palsy or traumatic events like traumatic brain injury or concussion. Okay. But we teach the whole spectrum of pediatric
physiotherapy. I was going to ask if it's more the inborn, the natural, like genetic or diseases, or if it's like broken bones and like
everything.
The whole class.
It's a few classes that are dispersed through the program, but we aim to make sure that the students who come through and become new physiotherapists know what to do when they encounter children and the children with all kinds of conditions. So we make sure they know what to do.
Good, excellent. Because I'm sure there are a lot more injuries of children, like broken legs and bones, arms.
For sure.
Especially more than concussions, but that are diagnosed at least. But what are some of the primary ones you see when you're being a physiotherapist for children? That means it's a broken arm or a broken leg or a sprained ankle?
It's really everything. There's problems with bones and muscles, like what you're referring to, the broken arms and the sprained ankles and the broken legs and stuff. But there's also a lot of neurological conditions, so things that the kids would be born with, or genetic issues and things that interfere with how they develop, so how they can learn how to walk and learn how to sit properly or function or participate in sports and stuff. And there's also, believe it or not, a lot of cardiorespiratory conditions or diseases that affect the way they breathe, like cystic fibrosis, for example. So physiotherapists take care of all of these conditions, because the goal here is to make sure that they can fully participate in in motor activities and physical activities as much as they can throughout their lives. So that's promoting healthy lifestyles, promoting, optimal function is basically what physios do. So they would do that for all the different, the whole spectrum of conditions that we can encounter. So that's my teaching sort of life. But the concussion piece is more in my research at the children's,
Well, I was about to start with that, because I was just going to say that I was actually just a physio yesterday, Justin Penny at TSL Physio in Churchill Square in St. John Newfoundland. So anyone's listening, he's a great physio. And that's because I had like lower back pain that's gone now, and just staying on top of it. And I guess I haven't performed it. Why did you pick physio? Why did you think you needed physio? Because it was self-assigned, and so it was self-referral. So I just said, I just trust physios. And I know, and also because my cancer surgery 3 years ago, I had my colon removed. So I had they cut probably the cancer, and also I lost a lot of strength there. And that probably led to my low back pain, which was again momentary, because I keep active otherwise. I keep it, it was momentary, but I wanted to make sure that my physio, I brought up the whole thing just to say that there's just so many areas the physios can help you with that. Or they used to originally think of I had cancer, I had surgery, and think of physios, but they're essentially part of it. But now we'll get to part where the listeners of this podcast will know that's concussion. And so, at the McGill, at the Montreal Children's Hospital, pediatric concussion that you concentrate on. But what areas? So you define what is your exact area of research? Your to see your current study, let's say.
Okay, so we're very interested in. There's two main pieces of the research I do. One of them is to look at different. What happens and consequences of concussions in kids. So we're looking at all kinds of different systems. For a while, I was very interested in balance and how they, how they can function in complex situations in terms of balance and walking and moving around. And more recently, we've been very interested in their vision and their how they can function in terms of being able to read and to function visually navigating in their environment.
So more than their perception, kind of.
Correct, the perception and the pure motor components of the of vision, also how the eyes move and how the eyes and the head coordinate.
Okay.
And that's more the vestibular system. So it's still related to balance a little bit, but it's looking at those types of consequences of concussion, because we think there's a relationship between those deficits and the way they can then return to school and to their sports. So we're interested in looking at that. So that's my first area. And then the second area is intervention, so treatments. So we, for about 15 years, we've been very interested in how physical activity or aerobic activity and different kinds of physical activity promotes recovery after concussion. So we've been, working on using exercise as a method, a treatment method, an intervention for these kids and teenagers. And then more recently, we're interested in visual treatments or interventions for visual perception and interventions for dizziness and overall functioning of their, how they navigate the environment. So it's basically looking at consequences and then looking at how we can treat them.
Well, this sounds like the anxiety. Like, I've kind of interviewed people who are into that separately. Like, you know, Katie Mitchell, who's a PhD at Laurier, and she's also owns her own clinic there, runs her own clinic, and she just does a lot with visual, and she's on the podcast a bunch. She had her own mini podcast on this podcast, and she's great. And also, you're saying the visual, how they children are. Necessarily showing how visual and but shall get to Megan Adams, you know, UFT. I don't know if you know her, but Megan Adams. But I'll ask you about her later. See, biopsychosocial was one of her things. I heard you mention that because I heard you first on Dr. Mark Roig's podcast.
Because
you said the activities like the getting back to exercise and everything, just his focus, and also. Dr. Michelle Palmer, who has now been on the podcast twice in the last 2 months, or maybe not even 2 months, the last 6 weeks. And because Andrew Ernest is very interesting stuff, but they're doing research here in St. John's about exercise and that how it can help with recovery from brain injury, whether it be concussion or any other traumatic brain injury. But I guess so, let's say you don't, you know, I'll ask you about more about. Just so, can you talk about the how important, because I don't even know where to start. There's so much interesting stuff there. How much the biopsychosocial, you talk about that on Dr. Roig's podcast, and of course, and for people on this podcast, just what is that and why is it so important for?
Okay, so we're talking about the biopsychosocial. Approach to seeing concussion. For a long time, concussion was seen as a sports medicine sort of injury that was in the realm of sports medicine. And because of that, it was not looked at as much as the neurological or brain injury condition it is. And we know that I work in a children's hospital, so I've also worked with kids who have more severe brain injuries and not just the mild traumatic brain injury or concussion. And we know that the injury is, but one of the injury itself is just one of the components that will make make the child active or functioning optimally. So when you take a lens that is more biopsychosocial, it means that you incorporate the bio part, the injury part, the brain being damaged or functionally damaged or whatever. That's the bio part. And the psychosocial means that you want to bring in the factors that the child brings to to the injury. So whatever they were before, did they have headaches before? Were they anxious before? What does this injury, the injury happens to somebody. It doesn't just happen on a theoretical brain. It happens to a brain that is part of somebody already. So this whole picture, and it also happens to a child that is within an environment that exists before the injury, and that will exist or might be affected and will continue to exist after the injury also. So it's this combination of the injury that happens on the brain, but also the psychosocial stuff that is present around within the child and around them. And all of this taken together will contribute to what happens after and how the concussion recovers and how the child functions after. So you can have a very mild, what seems like a very mild brain injury that can happen on a child who already brings to the picture some complexity with the, you know, the, some anxiety or some previous existing headaches that will fare worse than somebody who looks like they have a more severe injury, but who were healthy before and did not have all this complexity of other conditions. And similarly, you can have a mild injury that happens in a quite chaotic environment where the child doesn't have support system, doesn't have access to, to healthcare as much, doesn't have, you know, as much support at school. And they'll fare worse than a child who has a bit of a more severe injury, but for whom all these support systems exist. So that's why we say biopsychosocial. It just shows, it just brings in this more complex picture than just talking about a concussion.
Exactly. It's so I'm just unfortunate that it has such a complex name to it, because it really is the actual treatment, the actual way someone gets better from all these different types of different areas of bio, like said, bio and psychosocial, like all those areas. And it has such a biopsychosocial, sounds like a complex name for the way to treat someone, but it's really the way that people should be treated, like they are human beings, and the environments and their life was different before and after, and so it's affected by, like you're saying, it affects someone. Had the injury happen to someone, didn't just happen.
And,
So I mean, I don't even know where they go past this, but I guess we'll go with think about more about what I want to ask you while you talk about the children. So I guess this is the best part I should ask you for. How do you define children? Zero to 10 or
born?
Children, is there distinct?
Oh, that's a good question. So we the pediatric population is usually 0 to 17. So it includes the adolescents as well.
Yeah.
And your question as to whether the children and the adolescents are different.
Yeah.
The short answer to that will be absolutely.
Oh, yeah. every child is different.
But I mean, in terms of age group, for some functions, they are more than for others. So it's surprising to some people, but the highest, the group that sustains the most concussions in pediatrics is the kids who are 0 to 1 years old. So
they neck strength and stuff. And good
neck strength, but also they fall a lot, right? They fall off things, off changing tables and all that. So that's definitely a group that would be different from teenagers, for example. So once you get out of this preschool age, many, many concussions happen there. The consequences are not so well known because not many people have shown interest in looking at that population, because it's very difficult to assess them, to look at them and to determine the consequences, because, you know, they don't talk as much and they can't report their symptoms. So that's that. After that, you know, but for the 5 to 17, we usually separate them in two groups. The 5 to 12 year olds, sort of around, you know, they're separated around school age and adolescence, more or less. So 5 to 12 and 13 to 17. So usually we usually study them in those age groups. So the 0 to 4, the 5 to 12, and the 13 to 17, in like three different groups. Yeah.
And actually, what I was going to mention before is that, like, last, which is just a release actually today, because today is Tuesday, June 14th, weirdly enough, because this is probably not about till July. But the one that probably thought there was our physiotherapist, not physiotherapist, athletic therapy, athletic therapist in the Jones, not our only athletic therapist, but the one we've had in the podcast three times. And she mentioned that the biopsychosocial thing about like how, why do you want to take an athlete who is injured, who all they know is like athletics and sports and stuff. And then like, because one of the recommendations was always, used to be taken out of play, and let them sit in a dark room and like, and just don't play sports for 2 weeks, whatever. And like, she said, you know, why do you want to take him out? Why do you want to, somebody's hurt, make him sad? Like, don't do it. Why you didn't do that to somebody? But of course, that's a different issue. But,
well, yeah, that's the, I mean, the remove from play is still what needs to be done. So they can't be playing while they're injured. And that's just like with any other injury. You want to make sure that.
Just be around.
But the sitting, the sitting around for 2 weeks is not the way to go anymore. No. So definitely what is encouraged now is a short break. So a couple of days of taking time to sort of, you know, reset and give your brain a little bit of time to sort of calm down. And then after that initial 2 day or 48 hour period, kids are mostly encouraged to restart being active. Now, the important piece about that is, yes, you can be active, you can go outside, you can take walks, you can jog a little, or, you know, do some physical activity, but you cannot return to any type of contact activity. So you cannot risk getting a ball to your head or getting hit on the head a second time while you're still recovering, because that's not such a great idea. It prevents good recovery and all that. So yes, be active after that initial rest period, but be active in a safe and reasonable way.
Actually leads me well to your thing that you're saying, that you study how aerobic exercise is a burst for treatment in children. Yeah. So you just, I know, talk about this on the, I used to talk about the study too much, but I guess you can talk about just the idea of it behind the study and why you think, why, what research is telling you that, why it's so good.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Well, exercise is recognized as being pretty good for many, many things. So it's recognized as a treatment for migraines. It's recognized as a treatment option for mental health problems, and even recognized as an activity for cognitive decline in older adults. So we find when you look through the science, you find physical activity or exercise in many, many different conditions. So it's the same.
Is there a definition of this, like physical activity, exercise? Like, is there people say, because people say, like, I went down my motorbike or whatever, I went for a car ride, and say, that's not exercise.
No, not as much. Well, we can take physical activity as a bit of a broader term than exercise. So physical activity can be anything where you activate your body. Yeah. So even gardening, for example, can be considered a physical activity because it makes you active and it makes you move. So that's physical activity. When we talk more about exercise, it's something a bit more organized and structured, not organized in the sense that you need an association or a team, but organized in the sense that there's, you know, if you do aerobic exercise, for example, you go running, there's a start, there's an end, there's a certain way you have to achieve this heart rate and all that. So that's more the aerobic exercise, or you could do strengthening exercise, which is lifting weights or lifting your own body. So exercise is a bit more narrow than physical activity, but that's usually what we mean when we talk about physical activity or exercise. So it's the use of exercise really that we have studied with children, not just general physical activity, but the prescription of exercise for certain duration that we've studied now for just about 15 years. So what we tell what we usually do with the kids is to prescribe some exercise that will make them move and raise their heart rate, but stay within reasonable increase of their symptoms. So for example, if they come and they have persisting headaches, for example, after the concussion, that's a very common symptoms. Well, we would tell them to exercise for a certain duration and a certain intensity that would not make their headache too much worse. So we can accept that it will increase your headache a little bit, of course, because you've been sitting and not doing very much. So it will increase the headache a bit. But if it goes beyond a certain level, then we tell them, okay, that's too much. You've got to restrain yourself a little bit. So that's how we sort of play with exercise, with duration and intensity, so that it helps reset their brain, sort of, if you want to think about that, tolerate exercise more and more, but in a very supervised and graded nature. So that's essentially what.
And how do the kids, I mean, you say you book them in 0 to 4 and 5 to 12 and whatever, and with 13 to 17. So is on of the stream right now, but how do they tolerate that? How do they express how the exercise made them feel, or about the actual activity of doing exercise?
Yeah, so it's definitely not something we ask the 0 to 4 year olds. That we don't use exercise so much with that population. Yeah.
Okay.
But the children and the older children and the teenagers, we can ask them to report on, you know, ask them more in a more structured manner. Do we ask them about their symptoms before they start the exercise? So what are you feeling now? And then during the exercise, we ask them to reflect a little bit on how it changes their symptoms. And then when they finish their session of exercise, we ask them again how they feel. So we ask them, for example, if they have a headache, how bad is the headache? If they have dizziness, how bad is the dizziness, etc. So we run through a series of symptoms like this. and ask them in a more of a structured manner. Because if you just ask them, how do you feel?
Right. Yeah.
You usually don't get very granular information.
Yeah.
You miss a lot because they don't self-report things that they wouldn't necessarily think about.
Right. So, right. Yeah. So what was there, I know you can't talk about your own research, but what has the past research told you about how children adults, whatever, they respond to those questions of like, how do you feel now? How do you feel, like headache or balance? Those questions, the granular questions, how do you find research shown that people respond to that?
Well, depending on their age, you can ask differently. So we usually have scales or tools to ask them about their symptoms. Yeah. That are different in the 5 to 12 year olds than the 13 to 17 year olds. And the main changes are about language. So is your head hurting instead of do you have a headache, for example? Yeah. Language would change. And the level of details of the intensity changes too. So we found that children who are, the adolescents who are older than 13, they can manage to tell you, for example, the difference between a 1 and a 2 and a 3 when you ask them to rate their headache. But the little kids can't do that so well. So they're usually rated with tools that are more...
smiley face, with that face thing?
Yeah, correct. It could be with a smiley face, or it could be just not at all, a little bit and a lot, instead of just 0 to 10. Give me a number 0 to 10.
Yeah.
So that's how that's how we're able to tap into how they feel about their different symptoms.
Has there been any past research on this, on your theme of exercise, that has shown you anything, that any past research on the 0 to 10, or feeling pain, like, have you gotten that from any other research that's been done already?
The different age groups, is that what you're asking?
Well, sorry, no, that's not like, no, I mean, no. Like, I mean, the how children respond to those questions.
Yeah.
How you feel now in front of past research or whatever. So.
Yeah, well, usually when we administer exercise, whether it's our research program or others who have done the same sort of thing, exercise is helpful in decreasing their physical symptoms, like the headache and the dizziness and all that, over time. So it's now considered a pretty good avenue for treatment.
Okay, so it's across all ages?
Yeah, well, across the over the age of 6, 7, because the kids below that age don't exercise so much in a structured way. You know, they run around at the park and all that, but there's no real structure to it.
No.
So it's harder to study, and they're usually active enough and self-regulate enough that, like, they self-decide how active they want to be. And they're usually not in contact activities anyway. So they don't play football, or they don't play the younger kids, so it's not as dangerous for them to re-engage in their usual activities. So as soon as they feel good enough, they will start wanting to walk faster or run faster or play more with their parents and or their siblings and all that. And that's been enough to date. So we haven't really studied structured prescribed exercise in the below 5 age group. But the kids older than 5, we have some now good, nice research results that say that exercise is a pretty good avenue. We still need a bit of details on how much, how intense, what type of exercise, etc. We need to find out more about that.
Yeah.
But the concept of exercising is now pretty recognized as a nice intervention.
That's excellent. Because, I mean, I know I'm a lot older than, say, 17 even. So I'm a lot older than that. But I noticed that since my brain injury, that I was very, very active before my brain injury, of course. But after it, I've just the exercise has been just such a, made me feel so much better by just doing a lot. And I can't really walk as much anymore because of my injury. But when I do for walks and swimming, like I said, swimming is aerobic. More aerobic than walking on, get the heart rate up as high. But I do, and I'm assuming. And it feels so much better about just everything, not just like my walking doesn't improve necessarily, but just my attitude towards everything just feels so much better. And I think that's actually the what you found, what others found. And so I actually just one more question about language. So when you do with kids up to say 17, 18, like a 17 really. But do you communicate with the researchers who are doing more above 18 or 18, like young, the university age kids, or you know, above that, like that? Do you communicate your results to that? Like, how is there any transfer of someone with concussion when they're 15 and now they're 20 and they get another concussion? Did you talk to your other researchers about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we do talk. We have different venues where we share our results and discuss avenues. But you're pointing to something very interesting where we're not so good in general in the healthcare system in transitioning the kids to the adult world and adult healthcare and the care they can get there. And we have also found that when the kids become adults and they may sustain another concussion, the history of how they were when they were kids is not taken into consideration as much.
So you don't know
how the adults. So the clinicians who work with adults tend to stay in those years, and the clinicians and the kids. So it's something we're trying really hard to make sure that the history of somebody brings, they can bring their story with them to be able to influence how they'll be cared for and all that. But it's something we definitely need to work on. But as a researcher, we definitely share the results, and we inspire each other, the adult world and the pediatric world. We inspire each other we build on each other's work to move the field forward. But clinically, it's more difficult.
Yeah, I guess we have to read. But it's publishing of research papers is a big help to all that. But also, but I think, you're right. The clinical thing is like, because we get a little eye a lot on kids. And people say, like a 20-year-old will say, oh, I had a concussion. Some doctor will say, have you ever heard, has this ever happened before? Like, you know, when I was 15, I had a concussion. And how is how you know I'm good now? And that's what that seems
correct.
To be.
That seems to be the end of it, yeah, right? They don't ask. But that concussion at 15 may have taken, you know, a few months to heal, and it may have led to different things. And I think it's really important to when we take a history to dig a little bit and find out, you know, that I'm all better now is possibly not the end of that story. Exactly.
Well, this has just been a great conversation for me, at least. And I hope to have you back on, because I mean, your research and your communication is just the way you communicate the issues. And because as mentioned before the podcast, that most all physios have a great way of communicating. So, which is
thank you.
Obviously odd to me, because I have trouble speaking a lot of times. So, so thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I heard you on Dr. Roy saying, Dr. Roy's podcast, saying you have a lot of social media or your websites, and it's not necessarily up to date on that. So there's best ways just to go to the McGill Medicine and or physiotherapy.
McGill
and Montreal Children's Hospital. Just
correct. They'll find me there.
Yeah. So just Google those and so thank you so much for coming to this podcast.
A pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Zane. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. And this is July now. So have a good summer. And I hope there'll be more podcasts for me, but I don't know what they're going to be yet. But I may take a few weeks off, but again, we'll see. So thank you so much for listening. And please follow me on social media and subscribe to me on wherever you get your podcast. And like good pods, and you can comment and review and all that. So thank you so much. And thank you, Isabel.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And please subscribe, review this podcast, all of my podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And follow me on social media, so at Concussion Talk on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anything else you can think of, really, at Concussion Talk. Thank you again for listening. As always, music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound, www.bensound.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.